This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Josh Diamond runs what he calls education programs, challenging the way many view immigration issues. Andrea Jackson is heading up a listening campaign, trying to determine what people in one small Virginia city most want to see improved in their community. Joe Sekos cut his teeth on environmental problems, especially environmental problems caused by strip mining. But these days, Joe spends most of his time helping people like Andrea and Josh be as effective as possible. For Andrea Jackson and Josh Diamond are community organizers, and Joe Sekos heads up the group that calls itself Virginia Organizing. So whatever issues might be important in your community, immigration, pollution, healthcare, fair wages, or pretty much anything else you can think of, Joe, Josh, and Andrea will be here to address your questions and invite you to do a bit of listening as well right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Community organizing is our focus this hour. So what needs improvement in your community? Education, healthcare, clean air, clean water, taxes, access to decision makers? Have you ever thought about doing some community organizing work yourself? At 888-WMRA-TALK, we are entertaining your thoughts and questions this hour on just about anything to do with any issues important to you. In all numbers, 888-WMRA-TALK translates to 888-967-2825. Here with me in the Insight Studio, Andrea Jackson, who does community organizing work in Waynesboro and portions of Augusta County, Josh Diamond, a community organizer in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. Also with us through a hookup with a studio in Charlottesville, Joe Sekos, executive director of the group that calls itself Virginia Organizing. Welcome all.
Thank you very much.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Tom, it's great to be here with you.
Well, Joe, one issue we ought to get out of the way before any other. For something more than 15 years, your group was called the Virginia Organizing Project. This group that you founded, and then you changed the name. How come?
Well, after 15 years, we figured that the word project didn't quite work because we weren't temporary anymore. But the other is that we began to be very clear that when we talked about our organization, we try to get new people involved. We try to help them learn leadership skills and democratic skills. We want to get people active who are directly affected by the different issues that they're dealing with. Well, what we said was pretty consistent. But the problem was what people heard and what they thought of us kept getting trapped in these three letters, V-O-P, because nobody wanted to say Virginia Organizing Project. And if you ask people, what's VOP stand for? A lot of them didn't know. They just kept saying VOP. So we went through a lot of discussions with our board and our staff and our allies and realized if we got rid of the P in the project, that would solve a big problem because now we're Virginia Organizing, which is pretty simple. We do organizing in Virginia, and they have a clearer idea about what we do.
And I have a feeling that if I was to refer to your organization now as VO, that you might just crawl through the wires from Charlottesville, Joe, and slap my wrist.
Well, we'd jump in and say, whoop, it's Virginia Organizing, and try to avoid any shortcuts to that.
So Josh Diamond and Andrea Jackson, what's big in organizing these days? What are the huge issues?
Well, that's a big question. I think the big issues are for whatever they're big for you in your own community. And I think that is one of the priorities of Virginia Organizing and the work that I do, too, is to not come into a community and dictate to them what their issues are for them. However, it is to respect and to listen to the issues happening in that community and to work from that place. But some of the issues that I can at least speak to in Harrisonburg have a lot to do with immigration and how immigrants are either treated or dealt with here locally. They have to do with education, and a lot of it has to do with our environment in making sure that we have a clean water system in that Black's Run, which is a small creek that goes through Harrisonburg, for example, that that it's not toxic. So for our little city here in Rockingham County, it's a mixture of environmental issues, which are always tied to the agricultural community. We have a massive agricultural community here. And I say a really big one is figuring out how to work with and honor experiences of newly arrived immigrants, which is have come in massively since the early 90s here to Harrisonburg and Rockingham.
Andrea, I see you nodding your head at almost everything Josh is saying, and I know that both of you in your communities have been running something that you call listening projects, so I want to ask you more about all of that. But we're already starting to get some phone calls here at 888-WMRA-TALK. And if you listening have been thinking about joining the conversation or have a question or comment about what issues you think organizing should be focusing on, we still have a few lines open at 888-967-2825, but we go to Charlottesville for the first call. This is Travis. Travis, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, good afternoon. Hey, I'm just, I recently graduated UVA, and there's a topic that's been on my to-do list. I've never done any community organizing, but this was a topic I felt like is doable. It's something I've seen other cities across the country do, and it's a few people with a petition can tackle the issue of chemicals being added to public drinking water, namely being fluoride. And I'd like to see those kinds of things removed. It's not something a lot of people are aware of on a day-to-day basis, but there's a lot of things added to the drinking water, and the science is coming out showing that the premises for these are faulty at best and potentially dangerous.
Joe Sekos, Executive Director of Virginia Organizing, if Travis wanted to make an impact on an issue like that, where would he start?
Travis, I think that organizers always ask you two questions to start. One is, what do you want? So if you want to deal with your drinking water, the second question then is, who can give you what you want? Who can do that? So you have to work together with others to figure out, like, is this something that can be resolved at a local level? Is it the local government? Is it a water authority? Is it something that has to be resolved at a state level through an administrative agency or the legislature? Or does it get kicked up to the federal level? And sometimes the answer is all of those places, and there's different pieces that different agencies or different governing bodies have to do. So I think finding out who can give you what you want becomes really critical, and that often takes a lot of research or figuring out from others who've been active kind of what worked for them. Once you do that, then I think there are a lot of different ways that you can go about trying to get that administrative agency or that governing body, whether it's the local county government or the state legislature or wherever, to put pressure on them, to do petitions, to do letters to the editor, to have public actions, to have public meetings, meet with legislators, whatever. So I think that it's just one by one by one trying to get more people active, but it really starts with those two questions. What do you want and who can give it to you?
Travis, we have here with us two frontline community organizers, Josh Diamond and Andrea Jackson, and then the gentleman who was just speaking to you, Joe Sekos, who was a frontline community organizer in several places around the country for many years before about 17 years ago. He founded this organization that's now known as Virginia Organizing. So I'm curious on this specific issue that so concerns you, if you have a question for any of these people.
Wow, I'm just thankful to be on with you guys, and I don't have anything exactly right now. I just was curious about what are my first steps to maybe connecting with other people who are interested in this topic, and like you say, finding out, doing my homework, and finding out exactly who we're supposed to be talking to and getting a hold of as far as government. I haven't done my research here in Charlottesville, but in other places, it's been something that's totally up to the municipal government. And so that makes it easier for a small group to be heard. So it's not always a federal issue on this particular thing.
And it sounds like this concern about what goes into public water is a big enough concern for you that you might take some of the steps that Joe was talking about.
Yes, absolutely. It's been something I've been thinking about for a long time, just haven't gotten a little push to get initiated.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your concerns with us.
Sure, thank you.
888-WMRA-TALK. 888-967-2825. If you would like to talk about community organizing with Josh Diamond, Andrea Jackson, and or Joe Sekos, you can also, if you prefer to type instead of talk, post a question or comment to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Next to Craigsville, Beverly, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
I want to praise Virginia Organizing for their excellent work. I have gotten to know Emily Real in Stanton and attended some of the action things that she has organized. But I'm calling to tell the listeners statewide that if you wish to financially contribute to Virginia Organizing, state employees can do a payroll deduction from the combined Virginia campaign, which is like the United Way of for state employees. And those charities that are eligible for that payroll deduction are usually made known in the fall. And then the local agencies solicit donations. But it's an excellent way if you want to do payroll deduction, and you can do as much or as little as you like. And for my meager donation, I got a lovely thank you card from Charlottesville office thanking me for my support. And I'm just sorry it wasn't more than that. But it's just a painless, easy way to support a wonderful organization. And I really like the way that you formulate your plans based on what is needed by the local group.
Beverly, thank you so very much for your call. Next, we're going to go to Harrisonburg. I think this is Isabel. Your question, your comment, please, Isabel.
Well, I'm just calling and very proud to be a member of Virginia Organizing and the great work that they do in Harrisonburg, especially involved with the Listening Project and going around the community to collect stories of immigrants who live in Harrisonburg and Rockingham area, and how programs such as 287G, which basically deputizes local officers to act as immigration officials, and how that really hurts our immigrant community, because the reality is that this program was meant to be to get very violent criminals, and the reality is not that. They are separating and deporting families just over simple things such as an expired decal sticker or a broken taillight. And so they're doing great work, and I'm really happy to be a part of them, and I hope that more people join us to fight for what's right and what's just.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you for that,
Isabel. This is Josh Diamond.
This is Josh Diamond. And that I think that it is a very much a problem that we're seeing in a community that affects a large part of our community that I think is maybe sometimes not seen as necessarily valued constituents of the Harrisonburg community. And Isabel has actually been participating in the Listening Project here for a while, which...
I want to ask you more about Listening Project in a moment. We're going to hit a break here in a second. But I think Isabel referred to some sort of law or regulation by some numbers and letters. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, the 287G program is it's a memorandum between a local law enforcement agency and the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This can look different in different municipalities. Here it is held between the Rockingham County Sheriff's Office and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Essentially, what this allows our local enforcement to do here specifically is that if someone is brought into the jail here in Rockingham County, whether they're out of the city or the county, because we share the same jail, if you're brought in and you're suspected or you're thought of for some reason to be an undocumented immigrant, they have the ability to look into and check your immigration status.
So this, in essence, is local police agencies becoming a part of the federal anti-illegal immigration effort. Is that a fair way to put it?
It is an option for them to participate. It's a program that they opt to participate in.
And I know you've got a little more detail you want to share on that, but we are going to hit this break. Isabel, thank you so much for your call. Anybody else who wants to join the conversation, we've got some phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK, and we'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. I have a very personal question. All the years I've known him, I'm still not sure. Joe, is your last name correctly pronounced Sakos or something different?
Sakos.
Sakos. Okay.
Yes.
Joe Sakos serves as executive director of the group Virginia Organizing. He's speaking to us from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville. I'll get over my embarrassment. Here with me at WMRA's Insight Studio in Harrisonburg, we have Andrea Jackson, who's a volunteer with Virginia Organizing and is currently working on a listening project in the city of Waynesboro. Plus, Josh Diamond, who serves as a programming coordinator with the Wayside Center for Popular Education in Harrisonburg. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Josh, you were talking about this memorandum called 287G.
Yes.
What else needs to be said?
Well, quickly, I would just say to give folks sort of an idea of what it looks like. 287G is sort of an attempt to get local law enforcement to aid in the catching of sort of level one felons. So the program has been designed, at least on paper and the rhetoric of it, is to find high-level criminal undocumented immigrants and to have them deported. The mentality behind that being that it makes our community safer when we don't have high-level felons here in our communities. However, a lot of what we're seeing is actually low-level folks, a large percentage of people who are brought into our local jail as well as nationally who participate in this program are folks who have lower level, could have misdemeanors or multiple misdemeanors, who end up being separated from families for these reasons. This is normally a job of the federal government. However, local agencies have the ability to assist in this deportation process.
And this is something that the police agency for Rockingham County has decided it wants to do.
The current sheriff did not sign on to the current memorandum. That would have been Sheriff Farley, our past sheriff. But you sign on to a piece of paper that lays out the expectations. Some agreements look different than others.
How many local police agencies around the country are doing some version of this?
I'm going to say I believe it's about 66 counties out of about 3,000 counties in the United States participate in this program.
So Rockingham County is doing something that about 99% of the municipalities across the country are not doing. There must be some reason why in Rockingham County there is that level of concern about illegal immigrants.
Well, I think, you know, I think we have a very rural economy, which has predominantly our workforce have been, you know, folks of European descendant or Caucasian individuals. And who have felt very close to their time. And when the economy gets worse, we end up seeing these different ways and folks getting split up. And we need somebody to blame when our economy gets worse. And I think a lot of times that's happening on is immigrant folks who are very new to this area. And it can be somebody to
find
a reason.
And I don't mean to be harsh, but when you're talking about immigrant folk, you're talking about undocumented people, people who are not in the U.S. legally. Or else there wouldn't be a problem with their risking being sent back somewhere else by immigration.
I don't think it's necessarily harsh. I think that's a fine question. But I will say is that whether or not you're undocumented or documented, I think it still plays out in the sense of fear that we see in the Latino community, whether that's a Latino immigrant or a young Latino man who was or woman who was born in this country. I think when you have the ability to or the potential that someone who happens to speak a particular language and come have a particular skin tone come from the Latin American region, it increases fear in everyone, whether or not you're documented or undocumented. And that, unfortunately, we have a lot of mixed status families. So you have children who were born in this country who have citizenship, and you have maybe a dad who is on a visa and a mother who possibly came and joined her family out of necessity later on. So
without documents.
Without documentation or another form of immigration status. And when you have local programs and immigration that isn't based off of just and thinking about the family and the community structure, a lot of people get pulled away. And if you have your main breadwinner of your home who's pulled away, who is providing for you and your children who are able to stay in this country, what you have is a fragmented community. You have children who have experienced the trauma of losing their father. And you end up instilling fear in folks that maybe you're documented, but all I know is that there is the possibility that me or my family member could end up in that situation. And that's a lot of what we hear, you know, not across the board. There's all different kinds of opinions with Latino immigrants and immigrants. And so we can't just say there's one idea. But while a lot of folks, it is about undocumented people, it's not just about undocumented people. And this affects everyone.
Josh Diamond from Harrisonburg, Andrea Jackson from Waynesboro, and Joe Sekos from Charlottesville are our guests. All of them, in one way or another, are involved with the work of the group Virginia Organizing, a group Joe founded some 17 years ago. If you want to talk to them, 1-888-WMRA-TALK, 1-888-967-2825. One of the things we know that Josh and Andrea have been heavily involved in are these things they call listening projects, trying to find out in the communities where they are based what's most important to people there. Is there something that's most important to you in your community, an issue that strikes just at the local level, the state level, or even the national level? If you want to talk about it or ask questions about it, 888-WMRA, talk by phone. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. So, Andrea Jackson, what is a listening project and what in that realm is going on in Waynesboro?
Well, first I'd like to thank Josh and all his work that he's been doing in Harrisonburg. It's inspired us in Waynesboro to start our own listening project that we just started about a month ago. It's in its infancy. A listening project basically is going out into the community and actually doing exactly what it says, listening. We don't try to push an agenda. We ask very open-ended questions concerning the community at large to get a feel for what are the concerns of the people of the community. And
Andrea, take me a little bit through the process. How do you find people to listen to? Where do you do it? What kind of questions do you ask to get things started?
So we essentially met as a group. We formed a committee and sort of like...
We is people who are...
Or Virginia Organizing.
Okay.
So the people in Stanton, Augusta, and Waynesboro came together, and we focused primarily on Waynesboro at this time and said that we'd focus on about five different areas, focusing on the community at large, education, jobs, housing, and civic participation. And
so then do you like pass out bulletins or advertise a meeting or what?
No, it's very personal. We actually take those lists and we have about five questions per category that we've kind of asked that are non-leading.
And how do you find people to talk to?
We go into neighborhoods and we literally knock on the doors and we say, "Hi, how are you? We'd like to know what your opinion of the community is." And then we ask, we've done interviews in the playgrounds and doors.
So just wherever you can find people.
Yes. And a lot of people are actually very nice. They invite us into their homes. And I think Josh would say is that people like to be asked their opinion. And so after a while, they get really into it and we get a lot of great information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And it's amazing.
You use the same structure in Harrisonburg? You go knock on doors? Hang out at playgrounds?
We have sort of a mixed structure. When we first did our listening project training, and to give a little credit, a lot of this work was started about 40 years ago by the Rural Southern Voices for Peace. And it's sort of a community organizing model, a way of hearing, and one of the most important things about community organizing, first and foremost, is to listen. So for us, we did our first, our training, there was about 30 people, and that on that training, which was a day-long training on how to listen without projecting onto people what you want to hear from them. And the last half of that training, we went out into neighborhoods and we knocked on folks' doors. And some people will say, I'm not really comfortable, or they're afraid. And some people have said to us, thank you for listening to me. And when with every single interview that we end on, it's, would you be interested in becoming an interviewer? So it's the listener themselves can be transformed through the process, as well as the person who's being listened to. And then it's a way of just getting people involved in saying, how was this process for you? And would you like to participate in this process? And we've heard some pretty unbelievable stories. I don't know what sort of things you've been hearing, Andrea.
A lot of things that have just been very moving, very it takes you out of your own space and time and your life and puts you into someone else's, you
Can
know,
you
shoes.
Can you recall an example?
Well, the most moving thing that I have ever heard, and it was with one of the interns. We did the interview together, and I did the interview, and she transcribed. And we said, well, can we interview you? Do you like living here? And she says, no.
This is somebody whose door you knocked on.
Yes, yes.
And who answered?
Actually, she saw us interviewing someone else, and we asked, would you like to be interviewed? And she said, yeah, come on by when you're finished with this interview.
So can you tell us this lady's name or describe something about her? If you don't have permission to tell her name, we'll just make up a name. We'll call her Sally. But what age range was she?
She was an elderly lady, and the thing is that she. What was the most moving thing was, she just kind of had fallen on hard times. She lives on her Social Security. She doesn't have transportation, and she was just saying a lot of the different issues that elderly people had to go through. And with her, it was a little bit different because she had a daughter that had been on drugs and sort of had messed up her credit. And so therefore she had worked all her life, and she felt that I'd worked all my life and now I don't have anything. And so she referred to, she's like, no, let me get this straight. But when we were doing the interview, I don't live here. I exist here. And she was very, she apologized numerous times throughout the interview because she's like, I'm trying to get used to this. I'm not trying to be so negative, but I'm not used to being poor. I'm not used to living this way. And it was very, very sad. And it was so funny because the thing is, these people during those interviews, they're not statistics. They're real people. And I just happened to see her yesterday in Walmart. And I said, hey, how are you? And, you know, I said, you know, you came here. And she had used one of the public transportation. And I was just asking her about that. And she's like, well, yeah, but I have to, you know, hurry up and do my shopping so I can get back. And, you know, it goes from just reading these issues and problems on a piece of paper to their real life people that now you know, and you're a part of the community and they're a part of the community, and now we're connected.
So Andrea Jackson, volunteer with Virginia Organizing based in Waynesboro. You started that description by saying this was the most moving thing I ever heard.
Well,
I'm wondering if you can tell us specifically what it was that was so moving. And while you're looking in this lady's eyes, listening to her, what was going through your mind?
Well, it was the most moving thing that I had heard so far during our interviews. It was sadness. Both the intern and I, we left. And like she said, I just went to pack her up and let her move in with me. And it was sort of, it moved you to what can I do to help in this situation, that no one, it's sort of like a human rights issue, sort of like with the undocumented workers immigrants and things mm-hmm. of that nature, is that it's more than just those issues. These are human issues. These are human people that they are just like me. It doesn't matter what, you know, statuses are. It goes to the heart of what can I do to improve or to help. It's more of an empowerment. What can I do to help them improve the situation that they're in, or to make them feel like, you know, they matter, that they do, and that I just, you know, for me, it was just sort of like, I exist here. I don't live here. You know what I mean? And she didn't claim that. She didn't want to say, this is where I stay. She just wanted to say, this is where I'm forced to stay. I don't, you know.
I survive. I don't thrive.
Exactly.
I think that's one of the really powerful things about this whole listening piece and listening to people is getting re-energized. And usually a lot of times when you feel like you're in a really deep moment or relationship with somebody is when you get that energy again. Because I will say community organizing can be emotionally exhausting. It can be physically exhausting. It doesn't have a specific schedule. You know, you can really get burnt out. I'm thinking about a specific interview that I did with a young mother of three. She lives in a trailer park. I'll call her Imelba. And I had gone there to talk with her. And our listening project had sort of a personal relationship and a door-to-door kind of thing. It was who do you know, and talk with them to build that relationship and deepen that human connection, or go door-to-door. So I had went to this one woman's house because a friend of mine had said, oh, I know this woman and she's willing to be interviewed. And I got in there and she had a couple children, and this was in the living room of her trailer, and she had two twin daughters, and they were kind of jumping all around, and she was cooking dinner at the same time, and her older daughter I think was doing homework, and we're sitting on the couch looking at each other, and I'm talking to her and say, this is totally anonymous and confidential, and you know, but we're going to record this, and if that's okay with you, tell us that it's okay. And she was very reticent at first. She was like, I don't know about this whole process, and kind of having some fear around this person coming into my house wanting to ask me questions. But eventually she gave in. She said, okay, let's do it. So we started speaking, and we were speaking for a while, and we started talking about the issue of deportations. I said, one of our questions is, do you know anyone that has been deported here locally after being in contact with a local police officer? And she said, yeah, I do. I said, do you want to tell me about that? And she said, yeah, well, I have some, she said, paisanos, which means countrymen. This woman, so she was referring to some people who were from her home state, actually. And she said, I had three friends, and they went down to the river, to swim. And I don't know where that river was. And she said they went, and the three of them, and when they left, there was, there was a checkpoint, and at that checkpoint, they were checked, and all she knows is that they never came back. And for that reason, she has never brought her own children to a body of water in the Rockingham area for 3 years. For 3 years, she is not going to a public water space for fear of what could happen to her, although her children were born in this country. So just little moments like that can really hit you in your heart. So
we continue in a bit more than 1 minute. We're talking about community organizing with Andrea Jackson from Waynesboro, Josh Diamond from Harrisonburg, and Joe Sakos from Charlottesville. Joe Sakos, Executive Director of Virginia Organizing. So to you who are listening, my question is, what is important to you in terms of issues that you think in your local community, at the state level, or even at the national level, need more attention, need something done about them? Is it anything to do with access to community services of some kind? Is it anything to do with public schools? Is it anything to do with health care? How fair do you think taxes are at the local level or the state level? What is it that you would like to see people get together and create some activism to change. Is there anything? Or do you think that kind of activism is something that makes you uncomfortable? We're here to listen to your perspective or to have our guests answer your questions at 888-WMRA-TALK. Josh and Andrea, you've both told us moving stories about things that you've experienced in these listening projects that you do. I guess the obvious question is, what happens next? What do you do after you experience this kind of revelation from individuals in your community?
Well, every interview that we ends with, do you want to share your story? Would you like to share this publicly? And if so, what, in what way? And it also ends in, would you be interested in coming to a meeting or receiving more information? The listening project in Harrisonburg, Rockingham County was specifically created to investigate and to listen to folks' experiences around law enforcement and the connection between local law enforcement and immigration. A little while ago, a little over a year ago, we were at a meeting, and conversations have been happening for a while about 287G program that we were mentioning before and what can we do about it.
And for anybody who's just joined us, this is the program that hooks local law enforcement by their choice into federal immigration enforcement.
Correct.
Okay.
So there was a sentiment that there was fear being bred in the community due to this law or due to fear of deportation after being connected to local law enforcement. So while the listening project goes in without assumptions about what these folks' experiences have been with the law, the point there is it's an investigation in how to inform a campaign aimed at creating a community review board or ending this agreement with 287G program. So the concrete example of that story that I was just talking about was after this woman was talking to me, and it was kind of hard and kind of intense at times and brought up a lot for her emotionally. We got to the end of it and she said, "Wow, that was really good." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? What was good about it?" She said, "It was like a form of therapy or something." And I said, "Do you know of anybody who would want to do this?" She said, "Oh, my neighbor and my other neighbor. And then there's this other person down the street. They would do it." And I said, "Would you like to interview them?" And she said, "Yeah, I think I could do that." So in that way, you are developing people's ability to talk to their neighbors in a very specific and meaningful way to hopefully get them to eventually have some sort of community dialogue and consciousness about an issue that's felt by the community. And then to say, "Okay, would you like to come to the Virginia Organizing 287G campaign meeting?" And they say, "Yeah, sure, send me more information." And if you just plant those seeds slowly in individuals by listening to them and their experiences, they can kind of hear themselves, "Okay, cool, yeah, call me next time that meeting." So in that way, we develop leaders and bring them into a bigger campaign to hopefully stop an issue that's affecting the community negatively.
In Waynesboro, it's a little different. We are not as far along as Harrisonburg, and they had more so of a Pacific issue as so like dealing with immigration. We are looking to see what the issues are that we could do an action in Waynesboro. So we're actively looking to expand Virginia Organizing and to actually, like he says, develop and empower individuals and to be more active and to see what actually the issues are. And then from there, develop a community organization or an action that would be beneficial for our local community.
Community Organizing, our focus, Andrea Jackson, Josh Diamond, and Joe Sakas, community organizers. Our guests, our phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, that's 888-967-2825. Next to Stanton. Mike, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
I'm coming at this immigration issue in Harrisonburg from a little different angle, and I guess maybe it sounds like the organization that's speaking today is really for people who fall somewhat outside the mainstream, I guess not minorities exactly. So I'm assuming that it's organizing people who are minorities and relatively powerless. But I think for them to be using charity money to advocate for people who are illegally here, taking up jobs of other people, lowering the wage scale, and keeping us, I mean, there are 2 billion people who live in the world who would be better off in this country living in a cardboard box. Why we need to advocate for people who are here illegally using tax-deductible money is just absolutely beyond me.
I understand, and I hear you there. I believe it was Mike, around the issue of jobs, and I think it's a really hard issue when our own economy is falling, and it's not doing so well, and there are people who aren't working, and there are other folks who are coming into this country looking for that work and are getting that work. I would say a lot of my response to that criticism you might have, which I'm not saying is invalid in any way, is for us to look at, like, well, why are folks coming into this country in the first place? Is there a reason? I don't, at least a lot of the people that I talk with, it doesn't seem like it was an active choice to come into the country. And for the most part, honest people who aren't trying to steal anyone's job, you know, and is it really possible to steal someone's job? So a lot of times I ask, like, the question of what is happening above us in terms of who is making decisions about mm-hmm. jobs and about work before I would less necessarily blame or look to find fault. Pardon?
I don't blame the immigrant. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I was living someplace where I was making a dollar a week mm-hmm. and eating garbage, mm-hmm. I'd want to come here too. But if we're never going to have Americans. Americans can't live in America on the wages that are paid for fruit pickers.
And Mike, I'm so very glad. Mike, excuse me. Mike, hold on. Mike, can you hear me? Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm so glad that you called. I think we've got a really good idea of your perspective. Do you want to let me ask? Do you want to let me ask a question?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I understand. It sounds to me like your perspective, at least in part, is that if people are here illegally, they should not be here. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay. And Josh, is it your perspective if these people are here, however they got here, if they are hurting, they deserve some human attention?
Yeah, I do believe that all human beings, to an extent, you know, do deserve dignity and things like that. And I think I guess what I say is that and when we're talking about whether or not it's legal or illegal to be here, I think the question is, how have we created an economic environment where people can't get jobs? And how is it that, does it have something to do with the fact that maybe some of our own companies have decided to leave our country and to pay that dollar a day somewhere else where a government is actually making their own money and their own profit off of something like that?
Well, we're certainly not going to resolve this difference of perspective right now, but I am very mm-hmm. glad that Mike called and that we got both of you to clarify some on how you look at this kind of situation. We need to go on to some other calls. Mike, thank you so much. We have somebody calling, I think, from, is it Saluda, South Carolina? Wayne?
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing the name of your community correctly?
You are.
Your question or comment for Josh Diamond, Andrea Jackson, and or Joe Sakos, please.
I think one of the issues, I used to feel like that last gentleman that, you know, if you're here illegally, you know, you should go back to where you came from. But since I got into education, I'm a teacher in a middle school, and I have witnessed in the area that I'm working in, there's a lot of Latinos. And the kids are terrified that they're going to, their parents are going to be deported, or they are going to be deported at any time. And you can't imagine how that affects their psyche. But, you know, we're doing our best to help these kids get an education, and at the same time we're battling these mental roadblocks of, are they, at any point, are they going to be stripped out of their home and just taken away?
Joe Sekas in Charlottesville, I want to bring you into this conversation in part because these are the type of issues that you've been working on longer than anybody else, and you head up this statewide organization, so you hear from people across Virginia. What perspective do you want to share in reaction to what you're hearing from Wayne?
Well, I think immigration is a perfect example of a public policy issue that's decided by a small group of people. And part of what the great work that Andrea and Josh and other volunteers are doing is going out and trying to expand that conversation, bring other people in. And it's not a passive process. If they are talking to somebody and they say, well, I'd like to be involved in how we're going to actually deal with these issues, whether it's at the local level or state or national level, that we help to build a bridge. So organizationally, last year we had at least 75 meetings with state legislators with their constituents. And in those meetings, we tried to bring in these different perspectives. Because one of the things we learned several years ago is every meeting that we had with the legislator in 2009, we asked them, when is the last time you talked for more than 10 minutes to a low-wage worker? And it was actually embarrassing to most state legislators because they really couldn't come up with anybody that they spent some time doing the kind of things that Andrea and Josh and others are doing. So I think we nudged some of them and said, well, how about if you come with us and just listen to people. Don't try to solve anything. Just listen to what they're saying and put that into perspective that as an elected official, you have a responsibility to help try to figure this out. You're constantly making decisions about different policies and how they affect people. Well, how do you do that? Well,
how many of them accept that suggestion? And when those who do go to this kind of session, what do you see?
Dramatic changes. It's easy to vote on any issue. If you're just sitting there in the abstract and you're an elected official and you're voting on things that affect the disability community, it makes a whole lot of difference if you actually have talked to people who are dealing with those problems every single day and what they're doing. Or if they're struggling economically, or you're dealing with gay rights, a whole wide range of constituencies out there that traditionally are left out of those public policy discussions. You bring them in, and it's the elected official just knows a whole lot more about the details of those situations so that they can be clear on how they vote and the kind of things that go on in our community. I mean, the core of community organizing is we want everybody treated with dignity and respect, and we want our community to be the best community it can be.
Wayne, I understand that you're traveling along the highway somewhere, so I both want to thank you so much for your call and wish you a safe journey.
Thank you. And I wanted to commend them on, and exactly what he just said is so true, that getting other people involved and getting in the conversation really does change people's opinions, just like mine has changed over the years going from the private to the public sector. And I think that what they're doing is fantastic.
Wayne, thank you so very much. We have this one comment that I think we can squeeze in before we run out of time. This is from Becky, who on Facebook said to us, I attended a... She called it VO. How about that? I attended a Virginia organizing workshop in Charlottesville last year and want to thank Joe for his tips in dealing with organizations and the media. I don't have time to attend Virginia organizing meetings right now, but I will support them when I can. They are a valuable resource for people who are new to organizing. So, Joe, I am both curious what you tell people about how to deal with the media and what you want to tell people about how they can get involved in your organization or your efforts.
We're not going to give away all of our media secrets, but they can find us at www.virginia-organizing.org, or they're welcome to call our office at 434-984-4655.
Virginia Organizing, Virginia-organizing.org is probably the easiest to remember. And for anybody who's listening, if you go to WMRA.org and the Virginia Insight page there, you'll find links to more information about all of our guests. Andrea, we have just a few moments left, but you are the newest at this. What is it that you see happening next in your efforts as a community organizer?
I see people in my community becoming more empowered, educated to actually what they can do and just a variety of different things. I know a lot of the things we didn't cover, but with voter registration, education, the budget, and just tax
your
reform.
Voter ID law is something your whole group, I understand, is going to be concerned about, too.
Yes.
Maybe we can talk about that another time. Our guests have been Josh Diamond, program coordinator for the Wayside Center for Popular Education in Harrisonburg, plus from Waynesboro, Andrea Jackson, a volunteer with Virginia Organizing, as well as from Charlottesville, the executive director of Virginia Organizing, Joe Sakis. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you will find links to more information about our guests and the work they are doing. Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.